Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. This week we have Ty Crandall. He is the CEO of Credit Suite, and we are going to talk about business funding and how investing in your business can be investing in yourself and also in your finances. Welcome to the show this week, Ty.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. So let's go ahead and get right into it, shall we?
Sure.
Okay. So first of all, how can investing in your business be an investment in yourself?
Wow. I mean, there's so many different ways that investing in a business is really investing in yourself. You know, I got to tell you, I don't think you could ever learn more than owning your own business. You know, you're quickly in a position where you have to understand advertising and marketing and accounting. You have to understand management. You have to understand personality profiling and dealing with different types of people and customers. And there's so many things that along the way, just to even be able to own or have a business, you have to know. And in doing so, I found in my life that that's really empowering. That's the knowledge that I carry over personally into my personal life, because you learn so many different things that are so applicable to really all aspects of your life. But it's really much more than that. I mean, when you look at where we are today, you know, most people don't want to work a job. They don't want to basically trade their time for pay. They'd rather be able to, you know, invest in themselves, as you say. So when you look at it, you know, there's not a lot of jobs that have pensions out there where when you retire, you actually have money coming in other than Social Security. But when you have your own business, you kind of accomplish just that. I mean, you're building something that inevitably is an asset, and it's an asset that can be sold. So when I look at, you know, starting a business, owning a business, running a business, it's really a matter of, yes, it's nice to actually get the paycheck out of it as any job would produce, but I'm building an asset that has value that when I decide to leave the business, I can then sell and there is my nest egg. And in most jobs, you don't have that unless you're working for the government or some kind of aspect where you actually kind of have a pension. So, you know, off the top of my mind, I mean, those are a couple of things. Just the knowledge you obtain, the education you obtain along the way is a big investment in your character and you overall, not to mention that all of your work is building an asset of which is yours, then gives you the ability to turn around, go public, or sell that asset at a later point in time and make a good chunk of change, you know, even secure your retirement.
Yeah. And another consideration as well is not just the end game of selling your business, but if you structure your business so that it provides you with regular income, you may not have to sell it down the road. There are ways to, you know, structure it so that you pass it along to somebody else, but you could still receive interest in that business and receive income from that business. So there are lots of ways to structure it so that the business you build now can continue to provide you with that cash flow years down the road.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I was just speaking with one of my friends earlier today, and unfortunately, her husband of 21 years had just passed away at a very young age. And she's dealing with that right now of downsizing homes and dealing with an environment where they've always had dual income and now they have one income. But as far as my family goes, you know, if anything were to happen to me and I was to pass away, then the equity of the company, my portion of the equity of the company goes to my wife, you know, and she's then able to cash that out and actually get a financial return. So you're absolutely right. I mean, it's beyond just paying you as you go and being able to earn a nice paycheck and having something you could pass on to somebody else or whatever it may be, even if something happens to you, which I've learned in my life personally is like my biggest fear that something happens. It's financial security for myself, for my family, if something were to happen. And I think a lot of people have that fear. You know, you've got some security there. It's not just like you're earning a paycheck and then you lose your job, something happens and that goes away. That asset is still there no matter what you decided.
Yeah, and that's a great point. So when you're looking at building your own business, you need to get the money from somewhere. Most businesses, I'm fortunate, my business is pretty low key. It's pretty easy to manage. I'm a freelance writer. So my business just requires me to have an internet connection and a computer. And that's easy and that's inexpensive, but not everybody has that same sort of business. When you're talking about building a business, a lot of the time you need money. So how do people go about getting that money to start that investment in their business?
Well, I think it's a great question. And, you know, when you look at the statistics, about 74% of people that start businesses end up getting their money from their own personal, from them personally. They end up getting it also from family and friends. So they go to people in their insider circle, they tap into their own credit cards, they tap into their own bank account, their own stocks. And really, that's not what you want to do. I mean, everybody should know that a business can fund itself. It doesn't need you personally to do so, if you know the right way to do it. And there's a lot of vehicles that can get you there. In my experience, entrepreneurs believe that they're going to go to their bank to get money. But banks are, by default, they deal with very conservative risk. And business lending is a very risky space. So the one thing people should know is banks really, conventional banks really aren't the best option unless you have an extremely well-established business, been in business for years, great tax returns, great credit, all those things that a lot of us that are entrepreneurs and risk takers just don't naturally have. And this is when alternative lending really comes into it. And alternative lending is really dominated conventional bank lending. I think last year, per the Department of Revenue, about 98% of all business financing came outside of conventional banks from these alternative lending type of sources. So it really depends on a lot of factors. You know, first of all, you've got crowdfunding and you've got angel investing. And the reality with crowdfunding is that a lot of people think they're going to go get something crowdfunded because we see these things out there that talk about crowdfunding success. But in my experience, you have to have a really good idea or a very big internal network yourself to invest into a project for crowdfunding to really be successful. But it is a vehicle to consider. You've also got angel investing. And when you're talking about angel investing, that's not as easy as what a lot of people would believe that it is. Usually, if you're getting somebody to invest, they're looking for equity. And you have to usually give up a portion of that equity to get a lot of times those people to invest. Then there's just straight lenders, which is where you're kind of obtaining debt to actually be able to get the money. You're basically giving you a loan per se. And that depends on the strength. You know, if you have a collateral, if you have collateral like a 401k or stocks or inventory or account receivables or purchase orders or real estate, these type of assets can be used for what's called collateral-based financing. There's financing where you could just use that asset to get financing. So if you have stocks, you could borrow against those stocks and get financing for a business, or you could borrow against your inventory, for example. And the beautiful thing about that is you don't have to have a lot of cash flow or any in most of those cases, nor does your credit really matter. As long as you have the collateral, you can get approved. The other options, if you have good credit, if you have good personal credit, there are sources out there that will offer you unsecured business financing. And these usually come in the form of good credit cards or credit lines with fairly high limits and work fantastic for a startup. You don't need revenue. You don't need collateral. They use your credit to get you approved. You can usually get about five times the amount of whatever your highest credit limit account is. And then the other most popular type of business financing is called cash flow financing. And this looks at your bank account. If you have about $10,000 a month or more going through your bank account, you've been open for a year, then you can use that as collateral. And even with bad credit, even with no other collateral, they'll look at your bank statement, see the consistent revenue, and lend you about 10% of whatever your annual revenue is. So those are the three forms of alternative financing that are out there. And business credit is another option too. You know, any company from inception can build a business credit profile, build a business credit score, start getting vendor credit right away, start getting store credit at places like Staples and Office Depot and Lowe's and Home Depot within about 90 days, and can start getting Visa MasterCards with about $5,000 to $10,000 limits in about 4 to 6 months. And none of this is attached to the personal credit, so personal credit doesn't matter. It's all built for the EIN, and it's not linked to the owner's social security number. So I know it's a complicated answer to a simple question, but there's a lot of ways to get financing.
Yeah, so I do want to back up and look at this idea of business credit real quick, because it is one way to make yourself attractive is to build your business credit profile. And you mentioned going out and getting credit at places like Staples or applying for a credit card. How do you go about, first of all, establishing your business credit profile? How do you go about doing that and then building it up to the point where you are a little bit more attractive?
Sure. Well, and that's a great question that a lot of entrepreneurs don't know. And this is what everybody should know is that you, most of us, we're all familiar with personal credit. You know, you have a social security number, you go in to apply for a car, a home, or a credit card, you give them your personal information, your personal social, they pull a personal credit report, they look at what's on their credit report, and they make a lending decision. What most people don't know is that your EIN functions exactly the same way for your business. You can go in to apply for a business credit card, business loan, for example. They will look at your EIN credit. That's a credit profile that's linked to your business, not you individually, linked to your EIN, not your personal social. And they'll make the lending decision based on that EIN credit. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, $100,000 and $200,000 loans, they're still going to want to look at your personal credit. But when it comes to $2,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, even $50,000 credit cards, you can secure those based only on your EIN credit. I mean, to a point where you can even leave your social security number off the application, let the business stand on its own and get approved. So how you do that is you have to consider a couple things. And when you talked about how are you more attractive, that's a great question because that's what the first thing they're looking at. When you're applying for real business credit and you have none and you don't want them to link it to your social, well, you're not giving them anything to go off of other than what's on your application. So you need to know that every line item on that application is going to be scrutinized. You need to use a business phone or a virtual business phone, not a home phone or cell phone. You need a business address, not a home address. If you work from home, no problem. You can, you know, buy virtual addresses that you can use that are business addresses you're basically renting. But you don't want to put a home address on the application. You want to have a website. You want to have a fax number. You want to have a toll-free number. You have to look at that application. And you have to make sure that, you know, if somebody's – you just have to ask yourself the question, if I was lending myself money and I had a home address or a home phone number, would I approve myself? And the answer, no. I mean, you've got to be credible. You have to have the perception of being a legitimate, credible business. So everything on that application initially is going to be scrutinized. You need to make sure it reflects your credible, your legitimate business. If you've done that, then there's a lot of sources out there that will give you credit immediately. It's called vendor credit. It's not revolving credit cards. They're usually net 30 terms, for example, where you've got 30 days to pay back whatever you're borrowing. And some of those companies include Uline and Quill, Monopolize Your Marketplace, Lachlan and Associates, just to name a few. So what these companies will do is they will give you credit even if you have none. And what makes them unique is they report that credit to the business credit reporting agencies. So Dun & Bradstreet, Equifax, Experian Commercial. So you go in, you apply for credit, they give you credit, you use the credit, you pay the bill, they report the payment to the business credit reporting agencies, and voila, you have a credit profile, you have credit scores. Because those report as what we call trade lines, then you have a credit profile. If you paid your payments good, you have a good credit score, and then you can use that as a basis to walk into a Staples, to walk into an Office Depot, and apply for their kind of store credit, leaving the Social Security number off the application, forcing to only review your business credit linked to your EIN. And once that's established, then they'll make the lending decision based on that established business credit.
And then, of course, once you've done that, then you can take that money, put it into your business, and grow your business.
Absolutely. Or not even take the cash and put it into your business, but use it to fund your business. So, you know, for example, I had a client on an interview a few weeks ago, and I love this story because it's kind of how entrepreneurs function. They sold a flat screen TV and an old beat up truck for $1,200 total to start an accounting business. And they knew they weren't going to have enough to be able to fund the business with $1,200. So they discovered business credit. They went in, they got vendor credit. They used the vendor credit to buy office supplies, to buy their computers, to buy furniture, to buy the things they initially needed to buy to start the business. Then that gave them established credit. Then they started to move on to store credit. And they started to use that for the next step of what they needed to fuel the business, to get the business going. And, you know, in about a year into the business, they'd done over $1 million because they then moved on to American Express and getting cash credit cards. And then they used that cash to help them when they had had a couple hiccups along the way to save them, to rescue them. So they actually used the vendor credit, the store credit, to fund the business, and then used the cash credit to further fund the business. And now the business is successful. It's generating good profits. They're using the profits to pay down the credit that they obtained along the way. And now the profits of the business will carry the business.
That's awesome. So it's just an interesting way to look at it. And I think the key too is they seem to have a plan. If you're going to do this, it sounds like you need to have a plan.
Absolutely. The one thing you have to know is that, you know, as entrepreneurs, we don't believe in failure. We don't ever think of the idea of us failing. But statistics are against us. You know, 90% of businesses will fail. So everybody needs to go into entrepreneurship and understand that it's capital that determines success and failure. You know, and per SBA, that's one of the biggest reasons businesses fail. They don't have the capital and they don't know what they're doing. And to me, the two go hand in hand, because if you look at a company like Twitter's lost literally billions of dollars, and they can afford to lose billions and figure out their model. We don't have billions to lose. So a general entrepreneur, we have to figure out what works pretty quickly, because we're using whatever limited funds we have to be able to do so. So when you have access to business credit, you have access to this capital it provides, then you can make more errors along the way and still succeed. When things go wrong, which inevitably they will, you have a cushion to support you through that tough period until you move forward and become successful. You know, so it all comes down to the plan being, look, expect that you're going to run into bumps down the road. Get money before you need money, and then that way it's available to help you when you need it along the way, instead of you getting there being surprised that you're stuck and not having any financial means to be able to carry you through. And that, unfortunately, is why so many businesses fail. They don't do that one crucial thing. They run into unexpected events, and then they don't have the cushion to pull them through, and next thing you know, they're out of business.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I think that's a really great place to end this interview and move on to the roundtable portion of our discussion. Thank you so much for joining us, Ty. Again, if you could real quickly give our listeners an idea of where they can find you online if they're looking for a little bit of business funding help.
Sure, absolutely. They can go right to our website, which is creditsuite.com, and that's Credit Suite, which is SUITE.com/EIN. And if they go to creditsuite.com/EIN, we've got a great guide that'll walk them through the four steps in detail of how they can actually build their business credit.
Welcome to the panel portion of this week's Money Tree Investing podcast. With us today, we've got the best minds in the business. We've got His Supreme Highness, Joe Saul Sehi from Stacky Benjamins. How are you doing today, sir?
I like how you thought that up as a title for me. That's really good.
And we also have Linda.
Oh, Her Supreme Highness.
Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart. How are you today, Linda?
Hi, Miranda. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. We also have Douglas Goldstein from Goldstein on Gelt. How are you today?
Hey, Miranda. Oh, I've been looking at bonds all day, and looking at bonds all day makes you a boring boy.
That's good, though. Boring is good.
But I'll be excited now, because now I'm talking to you.
Yay. No, boring is good when it comes to investing. Today, we are going to talk a little bit about investing in your business. We, all of us, have our own business ventures and try and make money with our businesses. So let's go ahead and start with that. Do you consider it an investment to put resources into growing your business? And let's start with you, Linda. What do you think?
I do, because I think you're reinvesting in yourself. Whether you're investing in the stock market or you're investing in your business, there's only one thing you can do with your money at a time. So I definitely think it is an investment.
Okay. And what about you, Doug?
In the very beginning, I certainly put money in. In fact, I remember taking money out of my savings account to pay my secretary. But after a while, profits came in and that all ended.
So you take the profits that you make and sort of reinvest them. Is that the case?
Well, you know, I don't know how to say that, because the company makes enough money, so it pays all the, you know, all the employees and all the bills and, you know, paper towels and stuff. And then I take money out in the form of a salary or dividend. So I guess you could say I'm reinvesting in the company, but I try to take a lot out because personally I have savings goals for myself and my family. Every year my wife and I sit down, make sure we hit those goals. And so the first thing is to make sure that the company is working for us.
I like that idea. So your own investing kind of is more about making sure that your business is an investment that yields dividends for you.
It would be totally goofy as an investment advisor if I didn't run a profitable business.
That makes a lot of sense. All right. And what about you, Joe? What do you think?
I'm going to take the other side of this. I thought long and hard about this one, and I'm going to say no. I think the question was putting money toward your business. Is that an investment? And I think if it is an investment, it's a bad one. And I fully understand that one of the main reasons why companies go out of business is because they're underfunded, right? They end up having a lot less money than what they really need to keep the lights on. But still, if I put my money in a passive investment versus one where my two arms are working, I'm probably doing something better because I'm multiplying the effect of other people's work by putting it into something else. It also helps me if I think about my business to keep the overhead low. I had a business starting at age 16, and I had this great advice from a guy. I had a disc jockey service, and this guy who owned this catering facility was talking to me about my business. And I said, yeah, I want to have like a second location. I want to have this other three different groups. I want to buy these vans. And he looked me in the eye and he said, keep your overhead low. The number one thing you want to think is keep your overhead low. And I see that, you know, some businesses that make the overhead really, really high and don't get profitable very quickly, you know, they go out of business quickly. So I try to run it on a shoestring as much as possible.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about a business like what I have where I just write. That is a really low overhead.
That's a shoestring.
Yeah, so sometimes I have to buy myself a new mic for podcasting.
What do you do to the one that's there?
Well, it broke, so I just threw it away. It was sad.
I love having a virtual business too, Miranda. I love working from home with a computer and a microphone and a telephone, and that works awesome. But I do think that there's times when I reinvest in myself. There's times when I am in coaching programs or I go to conferences or I travel. There's certain things that I do, and I do consider that an investment.
But don't you see people, Linda, that do that all the time but never think about best use of capital?
Sure.
Yeah, I guess that's my point, is that I see a lot of people investing in their one thing. That one thing doesn't work. They don't have any plan B whatsoever. And because of that, they end up, you know, crash and burn.
You know, you used the word underfunded before, and actually that's something that Ty had said. I think that's like a lame excuse because people say, if only I had a little more money, then I could buy another truck or another employee or something. And it's probably just that they're pretty bad at running their business, and they're using the excuse that they don't have enough capital. So I think especially for newer entrepreneurs, it's something you have to watch out. Put a little bit of money into your business, obviously, to get started. But if you're not able to actually start charging people and taking money out of the business, it's not really much of a business.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think people think of more capital as an excuse not to have an effective business plan.
Yeah, and I really like what you mentioned there, because one of the things that I wrote about on Planting Money Seeds 2-3 years ago was how having more money doesn't automatically mean you're going to be in a better situation. Having more money, if you don't manage it properly, just means you waste more money. It doesn't help at all. So you need to get those fundamental business and money management things under control before you start saying, oh, well, I need more money. If only I had more money. More money isn't a magic solution if you don't know what to do with it. Right. So let's say, have you ever had to raise money from somewhere else to make your business work, whether it's getting a loan, whether it's trying crowdfunding? Have you guys ever done anything like that to try and fund your business? Let's start with Doug this time.
I'm going to go for no. I did not do that. I took a little money out of savings just to pay the bills, and that was that. I would be so embarrassed, I think, if I borrowed money. Like, who do you go to first? You know, your parents, right? And of course, then you're just destroying your own inheritance when you go out of business. So, and the, you know, how do you look at them over the Thanksgiving table? I figure I'd rather mow lawns and, you know, make the money so I can start the business going than borrow from someone I know.
Okay. And what about you, Joe? What do you think?
I thought at one point about a year ago about scaling up Stacking Benjamins more quickly. And I knew some people that were looking for venture capital investment opportunities. And actually, very casually, we discussed it one night, maybe over a little bit of wine. We might have already had some. So, you know, we start talking about it, and then my potential investors got really excited. And when I actually, on a more sober time, sat down with the spreadsheet and began looking at how exactly I would deploy that money, I couldn't responsibly take the money because I couldn't envision how I was going to pay it back quick enough. Because it was almost like what Doug was talking about. These were friends of mine, people that I knew. And if they're going to invest in me, I want to make sure that I'm good for it and that it's a real layup. So when they were going to give me a couple $100,000 to expand the business more quickly, I actually then went back to them and said, you know what? Let's wait.
Yeah. And along with that, you mentioned kind of venture capital. And even though these were friends of yours, how does the idea of, because sometimes you have to give equity in your company or ownership of your company or let them have some decision-making power in your company. Did that play into your decision as well?
The cool thing about these guys, because I knew them, which is why everybody says, you know, go to friends and family first. Because I knew them, they weren't looking for a piece of the business. They were actually looking for a reasonable rate of return. And because it was the business that was going to give them a reasonable rate of return, I was happy to do that. I would love to take my friends along for the ride, and I'd love to, you know, make them money passively. I thought that would be, that'd be great. And I would, you know, I'd love to have a business that could help my friends make some money because they trusted me with their capital. So I was going to pay these guys like 8%, even though I thought I could get better from that from a bank, just because of the fact that if it's a friend, the terms, if things did get sticky, you know, I'd be able to renegotiate more quickly, more easily. But I couldn't come up with a way that that I'd really make that work for them and me.
Renegotiate. Is that another term for like begging your friends? Please, please don't sue me.
Yeah. Wait till next quarter. I promise. I'm
Don't take my house.
Right. Don't break my knees.
I'm good for it. I promise.
And it was funny because I have the money that I could have put into it myself, but also the idea of using other people's money was intriguing to me. You know, I thought that it would be better and it would diversify the company if I had other people's money working on behalf of Stacking Benjamins. And I also thought that knowing yourself, like me as an entrepreneur, I do better when other people rely on me. And I don't know what that is. Maybe it's over time I've learned that. But when I know that we're going to tape the Money Tree Investing Podcast at a certain time, I'll show up and I'll be ready to participate, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. What about you, Linda? Have you ever thought about taking money outside of your own money? Have you taken other people's money?
I haven't. I've just used my own cash flow to fund my business and reinvested that back in it. But I've really watched people do some crowdfunding and been really intrigued by it. Some people have had some very big success with that. It's been really interesting. I'm more interested in the concept of it than really wanting to do it myself. But I think it's just a fun and kind of novel idea. So it's fun to watch other people and see what's going on with that. And I've learned a lot about, you know, inventions, the different kinds of businesses that people have. But one of the things that I love about just being in business today is the fact that you can totally be a digital business. And that's what I wanted a few years ago, change from doing live seminars and things like that to being totally digital and offering everything online. And I love that opportunity now.
Yeah, I do too, because you have that, got the location independence and you just have a little more freedom to set your own hours and you don't have to go to a specific place when you're doing a webinar. So it's really nice. I did an Indiegogo campaign. So it was not investment crowdfunding, but it was regular crowdfunding when I was writing my book. And so basically I just used it kind of as a way to do pre-sales for my book and just used it. I didn't raise a whole ton. I just had a really low threshold. I was just like, I really just want enough to pay to have my book edited and professionally formatted and then have a professional cover design. So I sort of did that just to kind of test it out, see if there was interest in the book. And there was. I mean, I fully funded it and it was nice to be able to have the money there to pay for getting the book published. So
that's great.
But I don't see myself doing, well, just the nature of my business. I can't see myself raising funds other ways. So
would you do another Indiegogo if you were writing another book? Would you do it again?
You know, I might consider it. I think one of the hardest things for me was fulfilling the promised perks, because when you do this sort of crowdfunding, you're not actually giving equity in your company. Basically, people are giving you money and you just give them thank you gifts in return. And so getting those together was kind of a pain. So,
I mean, yeah, but you got money. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I've got money. And then, you know,
you got money and you give them a tote bag.
And, you know, well, like they got copies of the book.
And
like a tote bag.
Yeah. And then I did provide some free content as well for some of the other ones. I'm like, well, here's some content.
What about people who have real businesses? Like all of us are talking about digital and kind of low capital intensive businesses. But, you know, if you walk down the street, there are people who in fact have inventory and rent and, you know, restaurants, and bookstores and that kind of thing. How should these people fund it?
I think it goes back to what you're comfortable with, right? So what are some other thoughts on that? I mean, I understand that when you have a business where you've got, like you said, it's brick and mortar, you've got inventory, hey, a small business loan makes sense because you need to get that cash flow going and manage that payroll. So I think it really depends. What are your thoughts on it, Linda or Joe?
I thought our guest did a really good job talking about that and establishing business credit. I thought that was really smart. I actually haven't even thought about doing that. but I thought, wow, that actually could be really interesting. And he talked about vendor credit. He talked about, you know, all these different types of business credit. I thought it was really good information.
What about you, Joe?
Well, I was reading a piece by Tim Ferriss just this morning, and Tim was talking about something a lot of startups talk about, which is instead of 10% return, 10xing your business, right? So putting something else behind it. And I think to do that, I think having investors and having bigger capital makes a lot of sense. But I think it still starts with the e-myth. I mean, it still starts with the same thing that I went through when I had these venture capital people, was I had to go back to the business and see if I had a business that was 10xable. And because of the fact that I think that I can achieve the growth that I'm looking for without that money, then it's fine. But I think that for most businesses, what you're talking about, I think that you do have to have not just the line of credit open, but I think you have to have a debt strategy. And I guess even bigger than a debt strategy, it's a monetization strategy. Where am I going to get the money from? Is it going to be through equity or through debt products? And how's that going to play into deploying that money? And I love what Ty said, by the way, about having the money before you need it. I don't know about having the money in your hand, especially if it's a debt product, but having the resource available so you can go get it when you need it ahead of time, way, way better, because when you need the money, nobody's going to give it to you.
Exactly.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that I have in my own life is a personal line of credit with my bank. And it just sort of sits there, but it's there if I've got clients that are paying late, you know, the rent still needs to be paid. There are all these things that I want the liquidity for, and I want to be able to go for it. And in my own personal life, it works well to have this line of credit sitting there, just this extra liquidity that's, you know, I mean, I have a real emergency fund. Let's not get me wrong here. I have a real emergency fund, but just the line of credit is just so easy and it's very liquid. And then I can pay it off before I start seeing interest charges. But it's the same kind of concept, I think, especially in business, of having that money there, knowing that if you need to tap it, it's already there and you don't have to go through the trouble of and the difficulty of begging for it.
I think what Joe said, which is really important, is that you have to have a plan for paying it back, because it is, I was very impressed with all the different ways people could squeeze money out of companies or vendors and not have to go to banks. But at the end of the month, you still have to pay. And, you know, 30 days, he was one of the loans he suggested. You have to have a pretty aggressive business if you think you're going to have the money back in 30 days in order to pay off that loan. Because otherwise, what I think probably happens in most cases is a painful, slippery slope where people all of a sudden find themselves $100,000 in debt and they say, well, but it was a business loan, and they don't even understand that they also signed for it personally.
Right. And that's something to remember too, is a lot of the time we talk about, well, let's build business as a credit, let's separate these things. But when you first start out, and especially if you've got a first business, you've got to make that personal guarantee. It's going to be based on your own personal situation.
I had a friend when I was back in Detroit who was a CFO of a small dental company that had 18 different dentist offices that were all kind of a conglomerate. And the owner of the business hired my friend specifically to get his name off of the loans. That was his number one job.
Wow.
Was to convince the banks that with that size and operation, like people think, well, you know, I got three employees, I should be able to take my name off of this thing. No. this really, I called it a small dinner operation. Really, for a lot of us, that's kind of a big operation. They still couldn't get the owner's name off of the debt.
Hmm. Interesting.
This was back in Detroit, you said. Isn't the system in Detroit, you just go bankrupt like a car company and then ask the government to bail you out?
Exactly what they did. That was the strategy, Doug.
Well, we are coming up on running out of time. So let's go ahead and talk about what is happening on each of your blogs or podcasts this coming week. Let's start with you, Linda. What have you got going on with Be Wealthy and Smart?
Well, I did a fun podcast about, of all things, tree houses and this trend for people to want to own a real house in the trees. So it's a crazy podcast. I haven't done anything like it, but it's really fun. And go to Be Wealthy and Smart and listen to it.
That's super cool.
That's awesome. Okay, what about you, Joe? What have you got going on over at Stacking Benjamins?
Well, just my 8-year-old boy just came back out. I'm like, that is so cool. It's Family Robinson for real.
Yes.
Right. Gene Chatsky, the Today Show money editor, just started a new podcast. And so she's on Stacking Benjamins this week, not just talking about her show, but talking about the biggest problems that she sees over and over again. We talk about that. And then we have an expert on about diamonds and about how to evaluate whether a diamond is worth the money or not.
Very cool. Okay. And what is going on with Goldstein on Gelt, Doug?
Well, we recently signed, well, I couldn't say signed, but Professor Burton Malkiel, who wrote A Random Walk Down Wall Street, is going to be coming up. And his book, I think, has been one of the top selling books, you know, millions and millions of copies sold, showing people how to manage their money. So I'm looking forward to hearing the ideas that he's going to share.
Very cool. And on planting money seeds, I have coming up a wonderful post about thinking through the situation before you go into business with your spouse, because what happens when they ask for a divorce 10 years later? So I've got that coming up on planting money seeds. So watch for that. Go ahead and visit us at moneytreepodcast.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Make sure to leave us a review or ask questions. We should have a questions episode coming up again sometime soon. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So remember to invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.